Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Mitch Teich. No matter what ethnicity you identify with, your cultural traditions almost certainly include food. Could be a traditional meal you eat at a holiday or the foods you grew up eating at your grandparents' house.
But Michael Twitty believes there's a distinction shared by the two culinary traditions he identifies with. Twitty is both African American and Jewish, and his Kosher Soul project makes the point that the two traditions use food to tell a story in a way that most traditions don't.
Twitty will talk about his Kosher Soul work Tuesday evening at the Milwaukee Public Library. We reached him in the Washington, D.C. area where he lives ahead of the event. Welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here.
Can you talk about your journey to the work that you do? Why is the work so important? And moreover, how did you come to it?
You know, I'm coming off the heels of being recently challenged by a very challenging person in the Charleston food media scene. And one of the things that got me about, you know, what I do being sort of like not just unique, but, you know, critical work is that it's grounded in historic interpretation. And for your listeners, what happens when you have people in contemporary time interpreting or bringing to life the past? Not reenacting. Reenacting is also sort of like in the same ballpark, but not the same thing. But there are very few black interpreters compared to non-black ones or white ones. And very few black interpreters telling the story of how our ancestors lived and how that affected the growth and development of American culture. And so for me, I really wanted to take that on head on because it's a very emotional and spiritually difficult place for African-American folks to sort of like explore and understand the world of slavery, or at least the world before the world we know now, where rights were not guaranteed, where access was limited. Let me just put it this way. Very much like the world we know now, but with a lot more barriers.
Sure. Well, and you use a term called identity cooking, and I guess it makes sense to ask you to define that a little bit for us.
Identity cooking for me is just kind of like my way of saying everybody cooks based on a layer cake of identities. What you grew up with, maybe or maybe not, your ethnic background, where you live, who's living next to you, who your neighbors are. It's all of those things put together. So if you're from the Pacific Northwest, you might be white female, 25, but you might be hit with Asian Pacific Rim influences, with influences from Mexico, influences from the native culture, influences from how your mom cooked, influences from the food at your church potluck. And just the kind of food that maybe you're getting into baking or something and you really want to be a great baker. That's a deity cooking. It's all those layers put together.
Well, and you grew up in the Washington, D.C. area. You are both black and Jewish, but even if you weren't, you could well have been exposed to both of those traditions where you grew up.
Oh, yeah, I was. And I grew up next to the Kemp Mills neighborhood, which is now very, very, very Orthodox Jewish, and that's part of the reason why I do what I do is because in our very mixed multitude, diverse Washington, D.C. suburbs, we were exposed to all sorts of cultures, and the bottom line is when you go to someone's house after school, and back when I was growing up, the grandparents who were the immigrants were still alive, and that's a very important part of the narrative because, you know, you could talk to people or be around people who made that transition into American life in times where that was a little bit more difficult and a little bit more taxing. And but they were also, you know, cooking and feeding you. So you go over to somebody's house, you have to know how to say, hello, please, thank you in their language, and where's the bathroom, and can someone talk about to play? And when you got in the door after school, 9 times out of 10, they put some food in front of your face. You may not have known what it was, but you couldn't refuse it. And so that was like my introduction into, you know, international food without actually having to leave my neighborhood.
So when you come to a place like Milwaukee and you are talking about both black and Jewish identity cooking when you come here, what's the conversation you want to engage people in?
Well, you know, I want people to understand that people who are Jewish who identify as black and black people who happen to be Jewish, which may or may not be the same thing. We have our own identity cooking. We have our own stories to tell. And it's not just Southern food made kosher or soul food made kosher. It's actually a much broader narrative. And food can bring us together at the table, but it can't make us think. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So in terms of Judaism, food is used to tell stories. It's used to inculcate narratives. It's used to impact a Jewish culture through kashrut. And African-American culture, history, memory, food preferences all reflect, you know, a historical and cultural journey that goes back long before the slave trade, back into the midst of our own human experience in terms of relationship with food and fire and ingredients and growing things, hunting and gathering and fishing. And so it's like you have these two really ancient narratives that are still speaking to us loud and clear today. How do those foods interact when they're on a plate? Is a dialogue on your plate? And so I really want people to reflect on that and bring to this discussion a real passion for how we can take things that seem so different but are actually very similar and make them sing together. Food, our spirituality, our community about our communication and stories about social justice and activism. How can we make all that work?
Well, and it's interesting. Someone I was talking with just the other day was making this point that food and stories of the past, especially these social justice stories, are so wrapped up in so many of the Jewish holidays in a way that they aren't necessarily in other traditions, although you would point out that they are very much wrapped up in the black traditions.
Yeah, and we're the only people who use food as a historical mnemonic. I mean, which is funny because you have these other cultures where food has played such an ancient role, you know, but they're not having the same conversation about the food. I think that's very important for people to know and realize and have a grip on that. It takes a certain people that have had to use humor, mostly satire and irony, who've had to use, you know, their wit, have had to use improvisation, who've had to, you know, kind of like bite the bullet and deal with really tough things to sort of come up with a food that, you know, meets the emotional needs that you have coming from those day-to-day experiences, which, you know, for centuries were unpleasant, forced people into exile. And then you have to, like, find the time to be happy, to celebrate, to be yourself, to own your identity. And I think that that's what both Ashkenazi, Sephardi, Mizrahi, African-American, Afro-Caribbean, Afro-Latino, Afro-Brazilian, and West African food do. They tell those kind of stories and those kind of narratives. And what I do is I put the ingredients together, and I figure out how can I make these things work together. So when people sit down at the table, they can see themselves in the food that you have put before them and go, oh my gosh, I get it now. I started the whole kosher soul thing because I was so tired of people having those huh moments when they approached me as a Jewish person of color. You know, huh? How can you be? And it's like, no, how can you be? If I sent you back to Moses, he might not be able to identify you as a Jew either. So, I mean, I'd be less in that boat than you'd be. But that's not what's important. The facade is not important. The face is not important. What's inside? What is inside the Kanish? It's more important than what's outside of it.
Well, and perhaps the Jewish holiday that has the most direct connection with food as a metaphor, if you will, is approaching, and that's Passover. And so is there a particular message that you can, or a particular connection you can draw during the Passover time?
Oh, absolutely. What I do is I always have an African-American Seder plate during Pesach. Passover is it. It is the message of now we are slaves, immediately, sort of like putting you in the shoes of other people, putting the shoes of your ancestors, putting you in the shoes of anyone who, you know, is thirsting for justice. And then, of course, no American Seder doesn't have elements of the enslaved African-American experience, number one, through this thing of Go Down Moses, which is very profound. But also, most of the theaters I've been to over the years have freely quoted Dr. King and other people who dealt with the legacy of American slavery. And if you put that with the food component, so to explain to folks, there are, you know, certain symbols, 5 to 6 symbols that are really important on Pesach. And, you know, there's the egg, there's the bitter herb, you know, there's the haroset. So my African-American theater plate has molasses for the haroset, because that was the main product of the largest industry in slavery, which was not for globally was sugar. Cotton was uniquely American, but sugar was the global powerhouse of slavery for centuries. And then the bitter herbs for me is collard greens. And then for me, because I'm Sephardi and I don't hold by corn being not okay for Pesach, the whole cake of American slavery, the thin, flavorless, hard to digest corn cake, which is just simply no yeast, no rye, no baking soda, just strictly cornmeal and water, is in place of the matzah. So there's all these symbols that I use that kind of double up, because I want people to understand Passover is uniquely Jewish, uniquely Torah-based, but it's also incredibly universal. And it's been a vehicle for me to tell the stories of both of my people.
Is there an equivalent of a gefilte fish?
Oh, you know what? I have to say, I'm glad there isn't. That's a uniquely Jewish problem, to be quite honest with you. And there is a gefilte fish equivalent, but it's not kosher, and that's you know, chitlins. I'm like, oh God, that is an incredibly awful, uniquely black medieval torture. I assure you. Now, there's some chitlin fans that they can like, excuse me, but they're just fine. And I'm like, no, they're not. It's like gefilte fish. No. No thank you, Bites.
So at the end of the day, I mean, is it oversimplifying things to say out of oppression comes identity cooking?
To some extent, but you don't need to be oppressed to have great food. It certainly helps you narrow your focus and tell incredibly important stories when you have limits, when you have want, when you have these boundaries of opportunity, because you become creative. You become astoundingly self-aware. But on the flip side, you don't need that. You can learn from other people's history. You can learn from their experiences and their stories. And you can learn to grow from that and, you know, use your own food world to create a narrative that is inherently yours.
Well, sure. Would you hope that you know, people who are listening to this who are neither African-American nor Jewish, would you just hope that they become more introspective about what's on their plate and what they make in their kitchen and why?
Well, absolutely, because we create a dialogue in American culture and food all about where does this come from, where does that come from? And I'm offering a parallel discussion. Who made your food? What are their stories? Who created the dishes that you're recreating? How do those ingredients relate to human cultures? We can use different foods to tell the story of human unity. And I think that's the most important thing for me. It's not when someone who's black or Jewish says, I get you. It's when somebody who's totally unfamiliar says, that feels like home. That feels like something I remember. When I hear it and I see that, then I know that I've succeeded in getting my message across.
Well, Michael Twitty, I wish you many successes in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Michael Twitty will talk about kosher soul, black, and Jewish identity cooking Tuesday evening at Centennial Hall in the Central Milwaukee Public Library. The talk is presented by UW-Milwaukee's Center for Jewish Studies.